Now, I'm conscious of the fact that I'm fast approaching the age where I'm expected, and I hope I'm allowed to as well, to start muttering about how things ain't what they used to be. You know what they say, nostalgia isn't what it used to be. It's kind of known as the grumpy old man syndrome, and I'm really looking forward to being a grumpy old man, and some will tell you I've been practicing for many years. But I think I can say with some certainty that things ain't what they used to be when it comes to talking about family life in Britain. That there's been a significant shift in family life in this country and much of the developed world over the last 20, 30, 40 years or so. One social commentator not so long ago suggested that this shift was typified by the ending a few years ago of the famous OXO family adverts on TV. And if you're old enough to remember the OXO adverts, actually they've just brought them back, but in a different style and format, which I'll mention in a minute. It was a series that ran from 1983 to 1999 on the TV, and the ads portrayed a family of four, mum, dad and two sons, that sat down each evening at the dining table to eat a hearty meal, lovingly prepared by mum, and made to taste amazing by her using an OXO cube in her casserole. So the idea was that we all went and used OXO cubes in our casseroles so that we could have wonderful families like that. Now, the ads were dropped in 1999 because the advertisers felt that they portrayed an outdated picture of the modern family. They said the age of home-cooked family dinners around the table was over, and traditional roles within the typical British family had changed. And as I say, they have reintroduced the OXO adverts recently, a few months ago, but now mum doesn't feature at all, and they have dad teaching his son at university how to cook over an internet link. So make of that what you will. I don't know if that means you have to go out and buy a laptop or whether you still have to use OXO cubes, or tubes, I think they are now, that they're plugging. Now, there are still some cultures around the world where the family is still at the very heart of things. It's a stable and important part of life, where family members are secure in knowing their place and their role within the family and within society and how to relate to one another. That's certainly true of the family in Burma, where I visit from time to time, where everything revolves around the family home. And many generations live together in that one home, often in one room. But in 21st century Britain, the idea of the family is much more vague. It's more fluid. Partners change. People come. People go. There's the apocryphal story of the two children in the playground, and one said to the other, "Oh, we've got a new dad." And the other one said to him, "Oh, really? Who is he?" And he told him the name of this guy. He said, "Oh, yeah, we had him about 3 years ago. He's not bad, but he's not much good at football." Well, you know, this is the thing now, isn't it? That a family will have children all with different surnames, where they relate to different people, where nobody really quite knows who fits in where. And so when we read the fifth commandment, as I'm going to do now, we may well ask, what does it mean in our modern culture? So Exodus chapter 20, verse 12, the fifth commandment in the series of 10 that God gave to the people of Israel, says, "Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you." Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. What does it mean to honor parents in a culture where families are fractured and fluid and dysfunctional? Can this still apply today? Or kind of are we living in a dream world? I mean, after all, things are different now. In Old Testament times, families generally stuck together closely. Several generations often lived together under one roof. Parents were solely responsible for their children's education and health care. There was plenty of able-bodied family support close at hand to help look after the sick and the elderly. Lone parent families were rare. Yes, divorce did happen occasionally, but generally, a single-parent family would be because of a death of a parent more than anything else. And then there was provision for how they were the rest of the family who were left were cared for. Children were considered assets to a family, not nuisances. So the more of them you had, the better. And in the home, the father's rule went unchallenged. Well, a man can dream, I suppose. How different from family life in modern Britain that is, with clinics and creches and schools and old people's homes and all of the welfare support network. The life and death responsibilities of parents and children for one another have largely disappeared. Teenagers no longer rely on their fathers to learn the skills of a trade that they can follow themselves. In fact, dad's knowledge will probably be out of date by the time they've left school. And anyway, the odds are high that either dad or the child will have walked out of the house before then, so there won't be any room left in the resulting two-bedroom flat that comes about because of the separation of property through the divorce. But there won't be any room in the resulting two-bedroom flat for granny to live as she gets older. But we mustn't get drawn into the trap of thinking, therefore, that all this means the fifth commandment has no place or relevance in our modern world. I mean, for a start, let's not kid ourselves that all the families in the Bible were perfect. They weren't. I think of Jacob and his family of 12 sons, with one whom he clearly treated as his favorite, which led to such jealousy in Joseph's older brothers that they plotted to kill him. Or think of David, whom Jonty was referring to earlier. Quite apart from his adultery, his management of his own family left a lot to be desired. David lost credibility in the eyes of his son Absalom when he failed to punish the man who had raped Absalom's sister. And the years that followed saw Absalom growing increasingly angry and resentful towards his father, ultimately conspiring to try and overthrow David as king. You see, the Bible knows all about real families, doesn't it? Real dysfunctional families, too. Now, this commandment, then, as with all of the other commandments, is a call from God to real people in a real world. And his call here is honour your father and mother. But what does it mean to honour your parents? What does it mean? The word translated as honour means more than just respect them or love them. Literally, and you'll understand my reluctance to say this, it literally means treat as weighty. Okay. Now, that's far different from obey without question. Okay, even though obedience is perhaps the most obvious way that a young child might honour their parents. And it's more proactive than love or respect. It's about doing stuff too. Actually, how we honour our parents will change over time as both we and they grow older. The practical outworking of the commandment will change. How you honour your parents as small children at home will differ from how you honour your parents when you're away at university, or in employment, or when you've left home, or when you're married and have kids of your own. What we need to do is ask and answer this question: how do I honour God by honouring my parents in this situation that I'm in now? Every day, for all of our lives, we need to be asking and answering that question. How do I honour God by honouring my parents in this situation? And how does it look in practice? Well, firstly, it does involve obedience. Paul's quite clear about that in Ephesians 6. So let's put something up on the screen if we can, assuming this is going to work. Paul says this in Ephesians 6, verse 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Okay? Obedience is the correct response to parental discipline. And being disciplined by your parents is a sign that you are really loved by them. That's the clear message of the Bible. It's a message that I think gets clouded in our modern society. But in the letter to the Hebrews, discipline in the home is used as an illustration of God's love for his people. We have had earthly fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them. Shall we not much more be subject to the Father of spirits and live? The Father of spirits meaning God. We've had parents who disciplined us. We respected them for that, even if we didn't like it. How much more then should we be subject to God in his discipline? Our parents loved us and disciplined us. God loves us and disciplines us. I wonder what the writers of the Hebrews then would have made of things today. In many modern homes, discipline seems to be rarely and inconsistently exercised. Indeed, the very word discipline seems almost to become synonymous in some ways with being overbearing and harsh towards your children. A much modern theory of parenting suggests that children are happiest when they're allowed to express themselves freely, and consequently many modern parents seem to keep discipline to a minimum. Now, the discipline of the Bible, advocated in both the Old and the New Testaments, it is not kind of laissez-faire. let them do what they want. And neither is it that of a brutal bullying or punishment fueled by rage, which is how discipline is often thought of. Now, the Bible calls for loving and firm discipline of a child by its parents. When Paul writes to the Christians at Colossae, he balances his call to children to obey their parents with a warning to parents not to abuse their authority. Fathers, do not provoke your children lest they become discouraged. The word that's used there for provoke or embitter is that used of challenging an opponent to a fight. But the family isn't a boxing ring. Well, saying just that, it's not a boxing ring. Don't pick a fight with your kids. The father who picks a fight with his children, demanding their obedience at all costs, or else, is actually a cruel bully. Martin Luther, the great reformer, he had a father who was like that. And it meant that for years, Luther was unable to pray to God as his father, because his experience of a father was so terrible. That's tragic, isn't it? Particularly when we learn what God as the perfect father is like through his word. Later, Luther wrote, "Spare the rod and spoil the child, it is true, but beside the rod, keep an apple to give him when he does well." I think Luther had not had many apples. The parents who indulge their children by not exercising loving and firm and clear discipline are actually not doing them any good. Those who tyrannize their families are worse still. The good parents are those who kind of tread the tightrope, if you like, between the two extremes by insisting in love that basic rules are kept, and doing so because they love. So when you're young, to honour your parents does mean to obey them. But what about when you get older? Think about striking out on your own. Does God continue to demand our unquestioning obedience by us of our parents? But it seems to me that the Bible's pretty clear on this too. And Jesus' own example is quite helpful here. Now, as a boy, Jesus obeyed Joseph and Mary, his parents, apart from one occasion when age 12 he got separated from them, and there was an interesting discussion about his father, and you can read that in Luke chapter 2 if you want to. But when Jesus set out on his ministry as a mature man, there were times when he clearly and firmly refused to follow his mother's wishes. So I haven't put this one up on the screen, but in Matthew chapter 12, verse 46 to 50, we read of an occasion where Jesus was inside the house talking to people and was told that his mother and family were waiting outside to speak to him. And Jesus said, "Who is my mother and sister and brother?" And looking at his disciples, he said, "These are my mother and sister and brother. Anyone who follows me is my mother, sister and brother." Rejecting his mum and her desire to come and speak to him, to say, "Actually, I've got a different mission in mind and a different understanding of whose authority I follow." That wasn't being disrespectful to his mother, but he was a mature adult man in his 30s and therefore not expected or required, and didn't see it necessary, to follow his mother's every desire. I think that's helpful for us to see. I think also in the Bible we see two key points in life when your parents' wishes for you take a back seat. The first is when you discover what God wants you to do with your future. When you work out what you're going to do. Now, if God's will, as you understand it, and your parents' wishes pull in opposite directions, then actually it's no contest as to which one should win, is it? Jesus said, "Whoever loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me." If it comes to a choice between God and your parents, then God must win. We must follow God above all others, including our parents. That doesn't mean that we treat them disrespectfully or harshly or unfeelingly. As far as we can, we need to be gracious and caring in explaining our determination to follow God's will. We seek to honour God by honouring our parents, even when we go against their desires for us. And that can be really hard, particularly when your parents aren't Christians and therefore they don't understand what's going on. It can also be hard when your parents are Christians and they think that they're giving you Christian wisdom and you're ignoring it. So we need to be gracious. We need to honour them in the way that we respond to their desires and suggestions for us. I remember very well going around to see my parents when I was considering going into full-time paid Christian ministry, and seeing the look of shock on my dad's face when I told him. Not quite a look of horror. Fortunately, he was a godly enough man to see what was going on. But it's not what they'd had in mind for me. You get a profession, which I had. I was a chartered surveyor, and you kind of work your way up the scale, and that's what they were expecting me to do. Now, as I say, they're very godly people, my parents, and after questioning me carefully, accepted what I was doing was what I believed God wanted me to do, and backed me all the way. But it was hard, even with parents like that, to say, well, actually, I know what you wanted for me, but actually, I'm going to do this. So honour your parents, even in the way that you say no, when you're older and able, and it's right to do so. The second key point, it's right to not to obey your parents, is when and if you get married. Now, from the very start, the Bible makes it clear that marriage involves breaking the old bond with your parents to forge a new bond with your husband or your wife. We've done it at the end of Genesis chapter 2. And this leaving and cleaving, leaving parents, cleaving to your husband or wife, means that there is no doubt whose wishes should prevail if you and or your spouse disagree with your parents or their parents about a decision that has to be made in your married life. It's not your parents that you obey. You have left them and you have cleaved to one another. And that is the relationship within which the submission and obedience and everything else goes on. Now, some parents, often for good motives, try to keep possession of their children and their children's lives for too long. It has to be said, some children try to hold on to their parents and let their parents possess them for too long as well, because it's convenient. And many a marriage has had difficulties, particularly in its early years, because that leaving and cleaving has not properly happened. Now, the passing of years, the change of circumstance, ends that requirement for obedience in the way that it is there for children. But the command to honour parents is still in force. It doesn't kind of, the fifth commandment doesn't say, honour your parents, your father and your mother, until you hit the age of XYZ. Because honour doesn't just mean obey. It's about more than that. It's a different thing. The command to honour parents carries on, because to honour means to treat as weighty, to treat as important and deserving of respect and honour and all these other things. Now, as a teenager, I was very poor at honouring my parents, I'm afraid. I wish I hadn't been. Particularly on the obedience front, I was extremely poor. I resented their interference in my life. I swore that I would never be like that with my children. And when I was married and a parent, I apologised to my parents and told them I realised they'd been absolutely right and I had been an arrogant fool. It was a very humbling experience to do, but I felt I had to because I realised how appallingly I'd behaved. Now, to their credit, all the way through those teenage years, they took my appalling behaviour on the chin and met it constantly with love and tried to exercise firm discipline. That's not to say parents are always right, and my parents weren't always right, I'm sure. But they were far more right than I ever gave them credit for. In an adult and married life, I am just so grateful to God that my parents did their best, and not to interfere once I was married, but were always available to give us wise and godly advice whenever they are asked. And my dad died a couple of years ago, and I miss him and I miss his wise advice, but I still value my mum's wisdom even now. We didn't always do what they said, what they advised, but I trust that I honoured them and honoured God in the way that I handled it. And I trust and believe that they knew how much I respected their views. Now, as parents and children grow in years, honouring your parents takes on a fresh complexion. But the dependency roles tend to get a bit reversed as age creeps up on you. And sadly, it has to be said that the honouring of parents often, these days, fades into the distance. But the Bible warns clearly that adult children must not treat their ageing parents with contempt. The elderly must not be discarded or ignored as a nuisance. The fifth commandment still applies. The Old Testament law cautions against this. Deuteronomy 26:7-16, I don't think I've got this one up there. Cursed be anyone who dishonours his father or his mother. There's the flip side to the honouring your father and mother. Cursed be anyone who dishonours his father or his mother. Jesus warned against this too. In Mark chapter 7, we read of him quoting the fifth commandment to expose the hypocrisy that lay behind the common practice of the time, where people would employ a kind of legal fiction to allow children to opt out of responsibilities towards aging parents. But what people did was declare their assets as something known as korban, which means belonging to God, and so deprive their parents of the material support they needed. You can imagine the thing, parents in trouble, I'd love to help you, but all my assets are korban, belonging to God, and so therefore I can't do anything. It's a real shame because, you know, I'd love to help you out. And no wonder Jesus condemned them. What an outrageous way to try and avoid your duty to honour those who bore you, cared for you, provided for you and nurtured you for so long. And notice here also that this commandment is not conditional. It doesn't say honour your father and your mother so long as they treat you well. It says, honour your father and your mother. That's because of who they are, not because of what they do. That's really hard. Some people have very bad experiences of their parents. How do you honour them? How do you behave towards them in a way that honours God? There's no easy answers to that. It's something that needs to be thought about and worked out about and prayed about, and with God's enabling only can you do it. But there is no get-out clause here. Now, honouring an elderly parent in particular can mean quite a severe sacrifice on our part. It's not as simple as honouring a parent, an elderly parent. It's not as simple as kind of saying we shouldn't banish frail parents to a nursing home and have them out of sight and out of mind. And, you know, that's dishonouring to parents, whereas having them live with you is honouring. Because whilst that may have been true in Old Testament times, where the family unit was so much stronger and so much more together, where the extended family provided resources, both people and time and even financial, to help care for the elderly. For many of us nowadays, that isn't the case. We don't have the space in our homes or the resources in the bank or the time to give necessarily to spread the burden of care or have our parent living with us. Sometimes there are better options than that for everybody concerned. But they need to be thought out carefully in a way that is honouring to the elderly. The important thing, you see, is the honouring, not the location, not the geography of where it goes on. Whether parents end up in our spare room or in geriatric care, whatever's best for them, there are always ways and means of respecting them and making them know that they are loved and respected and honoured by their children. That they're not just being discarded because they're a nuisance. I listen to Paul again as he writes to Timothy. In his first letter to Timothy, 1 Timothy 5:8. If anyone does not provide for his relatives, and especially for members of his household, he has denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. That's quite a condemnation, isn't it? If you don't look after your relatives, members of your household, when they are in need, you're putting yourself in a position that's worse than someone who doesn't even believe in Christ. That's what Paul's saying. Harsh words, aren't they? And looking after elderly parents may be expensive. It may interfere with the business of making money ourselves. It may impact on our lives in a significant way. However, their contribution to the community in other ways can be very valuable, and to our lives can still be very valuable, and to the lives of our children, their grandchildren. In biblical times, the advice of the elderly was sought after and respected, because it was likely to be better informed and more balanced than that of a younger, more impatient generation. The role of grandparents in bringing up children was greatly valued. I was privileged, apparently, to have grey hair at an early age. As you can tell, I'm only 31 now. Well, and a bit. But I well remember, many years ago now, a Nigerian friend of mine saying to me how he wished he had my hair. I was somewhat puzzled, as he had a full head of black hair and I didn't have much more hair than I had now. And I kind of jokingly said, well, you're very welcome to have my hair if I can have yours. But he explained to me that back home in Nigeria, those who have grey hair are much respected and considered to be very wise. They're greatly valued in the community. Because grey hair means you're older and you've got experience and wisdom. So ever since then, I've looked in the mirror with a whole new perspective. But he does make a good point, doesn't he? Honouring our parents continues throughout their lives. And they have a significant influence throughout their lives, if we allow them to, for good. Now finally, I want us to notice, as we come to the end, that this commandment is the first one, in fact the only one, I think, that finishes with a promise attached to it. So it doesn't just say, honour your father and mother, does it? It goes on. Honour your father and mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you. Now, does this mean then that if we honour our parents that we ourselves will live to a ripe old age? I mean, we've discovered the secret of long life at last. Just honour your parents, forget all the monkey glands and everything else, you've cracked it. Well, there may be an element to that, and there certainly may have been an element to that in Old Testament times. Certainly with no national health service provision or anything like that, those who were honoured by their children and therefore cared for in ill health and old age would be more likely to live longer. And so their children would be if their children followed the same example. But more importantly, the Bible sees a much closer link between the health of family life and the well-being of society than we tend to think of it as and see it as today. Both for good and for bad. So the failure to honour parents had dire results. Ezekiel 22, verses 7 and 15 combined. Father and mother are treated with contempt in you, says God to Israel. And the result is, in verse 15, I will scatter you among the nations and disperse you through the countries, and I will consume your uncleanness out of you. Failure to honour parents as God commanded had drastic results for Israel. So it can have a detrimental effect to society, and it have a good effect to society, as we'll see briefly. Deuteronomy 4, verse 40, you shall keep his statutes and commandments, which I command you today, that it may go well with you and with your children after you, and that you may prolong your days in the land that the Lord your God is giving you for all time. Now that's not applying just to the fifth commandment, interestingly enough. But it makes the point again, doesn't it? And it's interesting, isn't it, that people like Ian Duncan Smith may be mocked by some people for saying that the health of society is significantly influenced by the health of family life. But he's only actually saying what the Bible says consistently. He's not reinventing the wheel. He's just saying what's already there. The private area, as many people would have it nowadays, of the family, and the public arena of the wider community are just not so clearly or sharply divided from one another in the Bible. They actually are very closely related. So in that account of creation I referred to earlier, when God made woman, man said, possibly, have we gone too far? What's happened there, Tom? Have we lost it? Man said, I'll say what man said and see if we can put it up here. Okay. I must have clicked too many times. Oh, I must have not put it up there. Sorry, right. Forget that, technology's rubbish. The man said, "This at last is bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh." That was his reaction to the creation of woman. It's a great description, isn't it, of the bond and intimacy between a married couple. Bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. You can't get closer than that. But the same phrase actually comes later in the Bible in describing relationships which appear very different from the marriage relationship, certainly at first sight. We find a guy called Abimelech describing his extended family in Judges chapter 9 in this sort of language. He says to all his mother's relatives, "I am your bone and your flesh." Similarly, all the tribes of Israel speak in the same way about their relationship with King David. 2 Samuel 5, "Behold, we are your bone and flesh." Now, that might sound very strange to us in an individualistic society such as ours, where people find it hard to express or feel any warmth of relationship towards, I don't know, aunts and uncles or cousins, let alone in-laws. Certainly we would think it strange, wouldn't we, to talk of such an intimate connection between ourselves and our political leaders. Could you sidle up to David Cameron and say, "Bone and flesh, mate, I am your bone and flesh." Or to the Queen, "Happy Jubilee, Your Majesty, and by the way, I am your bone and your flesh." It sounds really strange, doesn't it? To express it like that would obviously cause great confusion. But just to recognise, actually, that there is that close link within society, not just within the family, is something that we have lost, I think, in many ways in the modern day. Let me finish by suggesting two particular ways in which obedience to the fifth commandment will impact on the church and beyond the church to our society as well. Firstly, honouring parents leads to a healthy respect for authority. Honouring parents leads to a healthy respect for authority. Juvenile delinquency was not unheard of in Old Testament times. Those who rebelled against parental control and authority, we read, were to be punished. Let me turn to Deuteronomy 21, verse 18 to 21. "If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and though they discipline him, will not listen to them, then his father and his mother shall take hold of him and bring him out to the elders of his city at the gate of the place where he lives, and they shall say to the elders of his city, 'This our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard.' Then all the men of the city shall stone him to death with stones. So you shall purge the evil from your midst, and all Israel shall hear and fear." Well, the severity of the punishment might shock us a little bit today, and we probably wouldn't want to go down that route ourselves. But you see how important it was that children did honour their parents, and how drastic it could be for society if they didn't. So drastic that they were to be removed from that society in the most severe of ways. And just as happens now, so in Old Testament times, unruly children became and become unruly citizens. And vice versa. Children who learned to respect authority and order in their homes and learned to honour their parents were far more likely to respect the authorities in their community as they grew up. And the same, I think, is true today. You can easily see the implications then for churches, where honouring those in positions of leadership and authority should follow on from honouring of parents. It's following the same model. And you can see the implications for society, where respect for authority is so often missing today. Surely what is practiced in the home, you see, shapes what happens beyond the home. And that's the second impact I want to suggest, that life in the home can clearly reinforce godly standards and values. Paul is clear that fathers have more to do than just make sure their children grow up strong, healthy, and educated. He says, continuing in Ephesians 6, verse 4, he says that they must bring their children up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. The parents are responsible for training and developing the character of their children. The children honour parents like that. will have a significant impact on society. In the Old Testament, parents were told to write up God's words on the doorposts of their house and their gates so that no child could draw it without knowing what God required of them. You see, the Bible actually thinks graffiti is a good idea in the right place. Okay, I'm not saying we go home and do the same on our doors. But the point was that the parents brought up their children knowing exactly what God required of them, knowing who God was, what he'd done, why they were to live for him the way they were to live for him. Children honoured their parents by accepting and living up to the God-given standards and values of their parents. Now compare that to a very common modern view that you leave your kids to make up their own mind about life's values and what matters to them. How does that leave society? Well, of course children were free and were able to reject their parents' standards and values later in life. But the likelihood was that as they got older, they would see more and more clearly what good sense their parents' principles made. Just as I did with my parents. I just wish I'd realised it earlier. Let me just finish with some words from a Christian writer, a guy called David Field, who puts it like this, which I think is quite good. He says, "It's the Bible's strong conviction that sound values learned in the environment of the home will make for social stability. The stronger's sense of obligation towards the weaker will inevitably show through in the shaping of political policies as well. Qualities like mercy and forgiveness will inform debates on the penal system. Self-sacrificial care of grandma will encourage respect for all elderly people. The opposite applies too, of course. A home life which expresses a constant struggle for power will produce selfish, power-hungry members of the community. What happens behind our smart front door does not just dispose us as a family to happiness or misery. It is either renewing or destroying the whole community to which we belong." It matters whether we take the fifth commandment seriously or not. It matters whether we seek to honour our father and our mother. It matters so much that it affects how we live in the land that God has temporarily put us in now and the land that he is leading us to into eternity. We need to prepare now by following God's ways and honouring our father and mother.